You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Justin Wong talking wā. Ki te whakarongo koe ki te Wire maronga irirangi poho mō tini rā, te rā o te kumā wōru o Hui Tanguru. Kia ora, you're tuned into the 95 BFM and the Thursday Wire with me, Justin Wong, for today, the 18th of February. And joining me in studio is Ayano Piperhelion, my usual producer.
Ta-da!
How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Justin. How are you?
Good, especially when we are in level 2.
It's
no
so
more
good.
Level 3 extensions.
I know.
Thank God for that.
Feels fine.
Very good. And on FIQA on the show today, we have our weekly chat with Health Minister Andrew Little, as well as the very first rendition of Neighbourhood Watch for this week.
And I talked to Dr. Janet Tupou about cultural dress and how that has been appearing in our news quite a lot recently with the oppression of people of minorities dressing, yeah, culturally, I suppose.
As usual, at Aha o Whakaro, you can get into touch with me or Iano with any thoughts you have throughout the show. Tukapatuhi mai, the text machine is 5395 and the phone number is 309-3879. And ka wae e ahi ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kōrero ano he pakihere roki maronga I te pai tukutuku o irirangi poho me haere ki 95BFM ira katikom. You can catch all these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website. I tēne wā tonu, let's get on with the show.
What's the title? The guy in charge, Dr. Ashley
Brim? The Director General of Health.
Yeah.
The Wire.
So we are in COVID-19 alert level 2, which means the disease is contained, but the risk of community transmission remains. So under alert level 2, people can reconnect with friends and family and socialise in groups of up to 100, go shopping or travel domestically if following public health guidelines. If keep physical distancing of 2 meters from people you don't know when out in public or in retail stores, and keep 1 meter physical distancing in controlled environments like workplaces where practicable. And businesses can open to the public if following public health guidance, including physical distancing and record keeping, as well as while alternative ways of working is encouraged. Hospitality businesses must keep groups of customers separated, seated, and served by a single person, and they can only serve to a maximum of 100 people at a time. Sports and other recreational activities are allowed, subject to conditions on gatherings, record keeping, and physical distancing, while public venues like museums, libraries, and pools can reopen with health measures and physical distancing. Health and disability care services will operate as normally as possible, and it is safe for kids to go to schools, early learning services and tertiary education, and there will be appropriate measures in place. People at higher risk of severe illness from COVID-19 are encouraged to take additional precautions when leaving home, while face coverings are now required on public transport and aircraft, but not on inter-island ferries. But school buses and children under 12 are exempt, along with passengers in taxis or rideshare services, as well as people with disabilities or mental health conditions. Let us know if you have any questions on that, and we will be very happy to do our best to solve that for you. And that's what level 2 looks like, and let's hear from the Health Minister.
Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
This week with Health Minister Andrew Little, I asked him about Auckland's change to COVID-19 alert level 2, vaccines, more funding to Rainbow Mental Health Services, and the former dual Australian-New Zealand citizen who was detained in Turkey for illegally entering from Syria. Here's the Minister. regarding the decision yesterday. Why does Cabinet has decided to move alert levels to level 2 in Auckland while the source of the current evictions haven't been discovered?
Finding out the source of every infection is, while that's desirable, it's not absolutely vital in order to move down alert levels. What we found is after 3 days, and even though we had two additional cases yesterday, all the cases known about, positive cases, were linked to each other. So although we haven't found the source, any other infections that have happened since the first case, case A and B, were discovered on the weekend, they've all been linked. So we, and bearing in mind that cases A and B had travelled pretty extensively, they've gone down to New Plymouth, travelled back, there's been no infection found as a result of their travelling to other parts. Those who have been infected have been confined to South Auckland, to, largely to Papatoetoe. And we were confident at that point that this round of infection is largely contained, and that justified moving down to alert level 2 for Auckland and alert level 1 for the rest of the country.
Okay, then moving on to vaccines. Now, case B in this case is working for in-flight services around Auckland Airport, and the case is involved in handling some of the laundry or even food brought in by international flights. So in this case, should we consider in-flight services workers or airport workers like baggage handlers and so on and so forth be considered as the same status as MIQ workers?
Well, there are some airport workers are. I mean, when we come to start administering the vaccine this weekend, the border workers will include those in airports. It'll be those who are facing passengers, so those who passengers see when they hop off airplanes and so on, as well as those at the managed isolation facilities. I expect that workers doing the work of the nature of case B, so doing auxiliary sort of work around airport and servicing aircraft, although not passenger facing, won't be far behind in the queue to get their vaccination. Now there's a bit, I mean, we've had a lot of advice in the early days about, and they're certainly port workers, both airport workers and seaport workers, how far down the kind of the chain of contact you require them to undergo regular testing and all that sort of stuff. And we got to the point where someone in the position of a worker doing the laundry and stuff off airplanes would be on a 2-weekly testing cycle, whereas everybody else is on a 1-weekly testing cycle. But that means that that person on a 2-weekly testing cycle is still right up the front of the queue in terms of receiving the vaccination.
Still staying on vaccines, now the Ministry of Health, a recent survey found nearly a quarter of people it surveyed are unlikely to take a vaccine, and they found this Pacific and Maori communities are less receptive or less confident of a vaccine, as well as those having a lower household income and education. Now, as you say, the vaccination is starting this week. Is the government going to have a mass education drive on the vaccine?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of work going on at the moment, reaching into communities just to provide good information and good education. I think what the survey revealed was that there is a reasonably high degree of hesitancy about the vaccination, but not because people are necessarily anti-vaccinations per se. It's because they want to be sure that this particular vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine in relation to COVID-19, is effective, that it's not going to have dangerous side effects. And it's just about making sure there's good information to reassure people about what is happening and why it is happening. And what we're finding is that as people get good information and reliable information, actually their views do change and they feel more reassured about the safety of this particular vaccine.
Is there going to be a separate Maori are there specific campaigns for Maori and other ethnic communities to drive up the vaccination rates in their separate communities?
There won't be separate campaigns. Obviously, we know that Maori and Pacifica are more vulnerable if they get infected. So we want to make sure they get their vaccination comparatively early, but we have a sequence by which we're rolling out the vaccine. Obviously, those working at the border are going to take priority, and those dealing with people who have just arrived from overseas, then health workers, then the families of those people all need to be vaccinated, and then we move into, and then elderly people, those in aged care and those looking after people in aged care facilities, and then there'll be a broader community campaign. We'll work with Hauora Māori kind of service providers to make sure we're getting into communities and Māori are getting their vaccinations, and likewise with Pacifica. So we have a sequence and we will follow through on that, and it is about making sure that those most susceptible to infection get dealt with first, then those most susceptible, if they were infected to serious consequences, get vaccinated, and then everybody else follows from there.
Okay, moving on to another announcement that you made earlier this week is the $4 million funding for Rainbow Mental Health Services. So what is this about?
This is particular specific targeted funding to services and organisations that provide support to young people on mental health issues. So a lot of those organisations have had to stand in line and compete with others for that sort of funding. We made a decision a couple of years ago that there was a specific need to support those providing mental health support and services to young people. This does that. It's a start to making sure that there is discrete and clearly identified funding for young people. But there are other programs as well that we support. We're supporting Manaake and Piki program. Piki program is a pilot program around the Wellington area for young people, and we want to roll that out a little further eventually. But this is an indication and a follow-through on our commitment that we would have specific funding for youth mental health services.
Labour campaigned in 2020 on their rainbow policy is also included to, and I quote, ensure healthcare was responsive to the needs of trans, intersex and gender diverse people. So what does that exactly mean, and when can we see more about this?
We know that rainbow young people and transgender in particular are more susceptible to bullying and negative environments in their communities. And so this is about ensuring that services and support are there, and particularly mental health services and support and counselling. And sometimes it's about helping families understand too what is happening. So this does that. So there are providers who are specifically targeted at young rainbow folks, and we want to make sure that they are properly funded and well supported to provide that support that is so necessary.
I know this isn't part of your portfolio anymore, but the Labour also promised to ban gay conversion therapy. I know the government said they will be doing this by the end of this year, but now there is a petition from the Green Party that had already got more than 140,000 signatures to ban it immediately. Can we see a time frame on that, banning gay conversion therapy?
Yeah, we are committed to getting that underway this year and hopefully concluded by the end of the year. It's not necessarily a straightforward issue, and so we do want to make sure that all elements of the human rights picture are taken account of. Obviously, anybody would say the idea that you would try to counsel a young person out of their sexuality is just ridiculous and can cause harm and does cause harm. So of course we want to stop that. The difficulty is how you define that. Somebody who happens to talk to, for example, a senior member of their church about their sexuality, and that church member says something that looks like or sounds like it's trying to tell them that they can do something about their sexuality. Is that going to be gay conversion therapy, or is it just somebody clumsily kind of responding to a query that they don't know properly how to respond to? I had an interesting conversation with a young transgender Indian Muslim on the weekend about this very issue, and she expressed some concern. She supported, obviously, the idea of banning gay conversion therapy, but the concern that she expressed was that her family is struggling with her identity. The imam of her mosque definitely does. And if it came to having to, you know, report somebody for gay conversion therapy, she wouldn't do so because these are the only communities she's got, and she doesn't want to, you know, be expelled from them, both her family and her mosque. So we just have to, you know, there are sensitivities to this, and it's not something that can be just sort of marched into willy-nilly. We've actually got to listen to voices, listen to others, and take care as we legislate for this.
Okay, moving to my final topic of this week is about the dual Australian and New Zealand woman that is now being detained in Turkey. Now, the Director General of the SIS, Rebecca Kittredge, said 5 years ago that less than a dozen of New Zealand women who travelled to Syria to join ISIS. Is Suhaira Aden, the woman in question, part of that list?
I'm not sure the Director General said that. I think what happened, she was asked a question about how many people, women there might be with a New Zealand passport in conflict zones. She declines to give a number. And when a journalist put to her, is it less than a dozen? Rebecca Kittredge said yes. So, look, there are people over there with New Zealand citizenship. Suhaira Aden is one of them. We know that, and we also know that she previously had Australian citizenship. The reality is, from the age of six, she lived in Australia. That's where she's done her living. That's where most of her family are. And that's why our engagement with Australia and what happens to Suhaira Aden is, you know, is very important.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little.
The Wire.
Kei te whakarongo koe, kei te wire maronga irirangi pōho. That was Health Minister Andrew Little. The time has just passed 22 past noon in the 95 VFM studios. We will be going for a quick break.
Zero emissions, no parking hassles, no traffic. Make your commute fun.
Get on a scooter at Freed, West Haven Drive, your micro-mobility e-scooter specialist.
Freed Electric Scooters is the place to go for all your e-scootering needs. Their full-service workshop covers all brands of e-scooters. Plus, they're the exclusive agent for top-of-the-line zero electric scooters.
Freed Electric Scooters. Fun, safe and easy to ride. Find out more at freedpev.co.nz.
Tinnitus can be defined as
a false perception of a sound and the absence of an acoustic stimulus.
It sounds a bit like this. Otago University is conducting a study to better understand early stage tinnitus. They're asking people who have recently begun to experience tinnitus to complete an online survey to help with their research. If that's you, register now at tinnitus.nz. You'll receive a token of gratitude for your time. That's tinnitus.nz.
Arcade Radio, Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Classic bands, scalding hot takes, advice on how to cuff your pants. It could only be Auckland's leading skate brand affiliated radio show.
When I'm in a New York state of mind.
Arcade Radio.
Show me that you're mine, though. Alright.
For all that and a heavy dose of fine tracks, tune in to Arcade Radio. Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m. with Mike, Jono, Eddie, Nat, and special guests every week. Arcade Radio. Only on 95 BFM.
This is a sad, sad day. BFM, the font of liberalism and tolerance at the centre of the University of Auckland.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire and Iana.
Yes, we seem to regularly see in New Zealand news stories about cultural oppression regarding dress standards. There's been numerous stories over the years from schools and workplaces. You might remember Air New Zealand not allowing tāmoko up until 2019. Just last week, Rawiri Waititi wore a taonga in Parliament, and just the other day, a Dunedin student was told his cornrows were too extreme. I wanted to understand this a little bit more, so I talked to Dr. Janet Tupor, a communication lecturer at AUT, about why it's important for minorities to be able to express their culture in their dress and appearance, what the underlying issues are, and why racism keeps popping up. I started off by asking her about the issues from the past week and the underlying issues.
And first of all, it's important to realise that this is not new territory. It's not just those two events that you've just spoken about that's come up. There was also a Cook Island student who I think was aged 5, actually, was forced to cut his hair or to be forced to leave. This happened in, I think, Brisbane. There was also an example here more closer to home where it happened at Glenfield College, where a Pacifica student was forced, in other words, to cut his hair or to leave the premises. And it happens everywhere. So we first of all have to acknowledge that this type of, I guess, oppression or this type of, I don't really know how to articulate it, but this type of activity and this behaviour is normal to an extent. But what's not normal is the people who are becoming victims of it slowly standing out and speaking their voice and becoming more assertive in challenging these archaic standards and just saying, hey, that might have been, you know, the rules written in 1991, but the world has changed. The face of Aotearoa is slowly changing and we need to change these policies and rules along with it. Yeah.
And how do we speed up this process?
This process won't happen overnight, but I think the first step is to acknowledge that it happens. And that's often the first step, which is quite difficult. People refuse to acknowledge. They're still in a state of denial. It's quite a dangerous statement to say it's the way it's always been, or it's always been this particular way, or the rules have always been in place. If you don't like it, leave. That is one of the most dangerous and disheartening statements that any human can say, especially here in our backyard. So after acknowledging that, you know, things need to change, slowly people will begin to accept change. And as we all know, change is not easy. And it also comes against our own biases, whether they are cultural or personal, or whether they are, you know, professional. But when you start to accept that the climate and the, you know, people's cultures around you are changing, then you realise that actually it's in myself, it's my personal responsibility, it's my personal duty to be a better treaty partner and to advocate change, to create change. And it has to come from an individual level, so not just consciously, but also unconsciously as well, just realising that as a human, as a person, it is your responsibility to realise that you can't hold these ethnocentric views that prevent other people from expressing their culture. For example, if I can give you my own example, I have 3 gold teeth. And I would be damned if the organisations that I work for were to say, Janet, we can't have you work for us because of your gold teeth. These gold teeth are an expression of my culture, of my heritage, and of my family. So again, the organization has to some extent got to put their hand up and be like, you know what, we can do better and we are going to do better. We are first of all going to acknowledge the differences that are apparent in our society and in different cultures. And we're going to accept that we will, take on board these changes and also implement them.
And there have been some changes, but 8 schools in New Zealand still are banning afros and braids. It's very othering. How are we still at this? How did we get to this point where an oppression of a culture could even be a thing in dress standards?
Yeah. I can't comment on, you know, the shorter stories without referring back to the longer stories. And the bigger stories at play here is colonisation. And people don't like that word, but we learn about it in passing. But the colonization here is beginning to be very apparent in the way that schools, institutions, and organizations have been set up. So by decolonizing, these particular spaces, we can then empower people, and the power really is in the collective and it is in the people. So I've been starting to see that a lot more, there's a lot of, people that are starting to sign petitions. They're starting to actually come forward with these stories of, hey, that happened to me, or, me too. So just getting these stories out there it makes these gradual changes towards those two notions that I mentioned before of acknowledgement and also acceptance. And once people start to see the movement in the collective, people begin to double check their own biases and become aware of exactly, how dangerous their oppressive behaviours are. Because sometimes this comes from a place where it's very unconscious. It's just, unfortunately, it's just programmed in certain people from a young age, or it's the way that their parents or their grandparents have always been. So they carry that mentality or that type of behaviour through to their adulthood and then begin to enforce them onto people who don't look or act the same as them. And I think, Ayana, that's where the problems occur. But it's also promising. It's a great time to be alive, where you see these changes, like you said before. But at the same time, there are also some schools that are not budging. And I guess that is where the power in the people need to be a lot more stronger. As I said before, it doesn't happen overnight, but just putting the awareness out there that, hey, my culture looks this way, and unfortunately we're not going anywhere, so we've just got to compromise or create a new space where my culture can meet, the existing rules of certain cultures that have been in place, and let's just find a way of, playing nice. Yeah.
I think fortunately these cultures and your culture are not going anywhere.
Absolutely.
Just one last thing. There's no denial that this oppression exists. We see it in the news. We see it in our everyday lives. Can you discuss why a white person in New Zealand choosing to wear cornrows is problematic?
Yeah, again, that's a very layered decision, and it can be quite straightforward, or it can be quite a critical decision that people might decide to do, and it depends where their motives are. So I can't really, I don't have the cultural capacity to answer this question. Personally, my culture doesn't wear cornrows, and I can't necessarily respond from a cultural point of view where my culture doesn't even use it, because that would be called, in a sense, whitesplaining, where I think or I believe that I'm the expert of a culture that I'm not part of. So to avoid whitesplaining, Ayana, I can't comment on that question. But I do see just the different nuances on how a white person can perhaps take on board some cultural dress or aesthetic dresses from different cultures where they don't necessarily put enough thought into it. Sometimes the dresses or the aesthetic appearance or physical appearance of a certain hairstyle or a certain outfit has got deeper meaning to it that a particular person from another culture doesn't understand. So before, I guess in simple terms, before somebody decides to get braids or to get cornrows, do some personal research into it. Like, have a look into what the bigger messages are. So if you walk out there on Queen Street or on K Road, what exactly are the different perceptions that people can pick up from what you're doing? If it's a positive thing, I'm all for it. But if there are deeper roots into a particular hairstyle, then perhaps it's up to your own moral compass to kind of deter away from that. But again, that's up to people's personal preferences. But I would go back to doing your own personal duty of researching that actual hairstyle before you take it on yourself.
Absolutely, and I suppose I should have framed my question how it can be problematic rather than is, because it is up to perception.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to talk about?
you know, what's going on in the world around us and the ties that are dropping from, you know, certain rules, such as what Waititi brought up, that these are all part of a difficult conversation that New Zealand is having, or Aotearoa is needing to have. And these are conversations that Aotearoa perhaps haven't had in a while. But now that it's in and on the table, these are all learning opportunities. So we need to kind of just try to detach ourselves from the spirit of offence and try to leave, you know, getting offended by the difficult conversations to the side, but having fruitful, engaging conversations. They're not going to be easy. They will be heated at times. But sometimes we get more offended at these conversations that are necessary, that we don't actually end up solving or finding an end solution.
The Wire.
That was AUT communication lecturer Dr. Janet Tupou.
Thanks, Ayana. Now let's head over to Tasman Sea.
You call that a news update? This is a news update. It's Neighbourhood Watch.
Neighbourhood Watch returns for this year, and this week I chatted to Radio Adelaide Zoe Canandis about Google reaching an agreement with Australian media companies 9 and 10 over paying for news content. But I began by talking to Zoe about former ministerial advisor Brittany Higgins alleging that she was raped by a colleague in the office of a government minister in 2019, which raised questions again about working culture in Canberra. Here's Zoe, and here's a word of warning. Some of the interview contains details of sexual assault.
So this week, the issue of the toxic treatment within Parliament House has been re-emerged once again, and this has come from very brave Brittany Higgins, who not anonymously came out and revealed that she was raped in a nurse's office, I have to say allegedly. So they report, news.com reported that a man who was working for the then defensive industry took the 24-year-old, she was 24 at the time, she'd only been working in Parliament House for 4 weeks, she was a junior staffer, and allegedly raped her inside the defence industry minister's office. Brittany's story follows those of other women who have spoken out about the inappropriate treatment that they've experienced whilst working at Parliament House. And she's told news media that the information was accurate. She said she felt she was asked to choose between making a formal complaint but also keeping her job. It's pretty harrowing, the story that has come out, and also we have seen this as well spark a little Me Too movement within people's experience of Parliament House. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has apologised, and he definitely slipped up in some press conferences, saying and comparing Brittany to his daughters, I believe, and there was a lot of backlash towards these kind of comments because It definitely was worded as if he could only feel sorry for a woman if she was someone's mother or daughter or sister. Brittany Higgins, however, has thanked the Prime Minister for his apology and has also, though, called for a review further than the government's initial response, which was this apology. Hopefully we'll see an inquiry into this and we'll see some justice served, and we'll also see this spark some change for the entire culture within Parliament House.
Right, so you only said Brittany Higgins herself called for a independent review. Has the Prime Minister not announced anything as of yet?
As of yet, the Prime Minister has announced two processes to better women working in politics. So they were both well, they were, one was to sort of improve the handling of complaints inside the coalition, and then politics more broadly, so to be able to handle, you know, quote-unquote complaints, which I think is very interesting wording, that women have towards their experience in the workplace. And another one that I'm not too sure, but yeah, as of yet, there hasn't seemed to be a really big, significant review going ahead just as yet. But there is a massive push for it. You know, within the Liberal Party, within the Labour Party, everyone sort of wants this to happen. So I suspect we'll be seeing that happening soon.
This, I don't think this is the... This is the first time that we heard stories from the other sides of the Tasman regarding about a sexist working culture. I remember a couple of months ago that you updated us about a story of the Attorney General having an inappropriate relationship with a staffer. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes, yes. Well, I think it's no... no secret that there is a very toxic sexual culture within Parliament House, and you know, Brittany Higgins has been very brave and shared the story with all of us, and we've been able to understand that more. But there certainly needs to be a whole other level and investigation into this, because yeah, like you've mentioned, this is certainly not the first time this has happened, and something really needs to change.
Okay, moving on, and now. This has been a developing story, but Google has done a deal with some of the news giants over in Australia.
Yes. So, gosh, I don't think I've spoken to you all about the News Media Bargaining Code, but essentially it was this piece of legislation that the Australian government put forth so that I think Google and Facebook would pay Australian news media outlets to have their content on Google and Facebook. So Google and Facebook would pay, you know, ABC News to have their content on their site. It's a little bit confusing. And essentially there was a big response from Google in particular. At the top of the search, when you searched on Google, they had this watch this video, and it was this lady responding to this legislation. And essentially this lady was like, cool, like we'll pay, but we don't want to, and that would be sad. To briefly kind of put that. It's quite a funny video. I'm not making fun of it, but it was quite interestingly worded. And so now we've seen, as of yesterday, Australia's biggest locally owned media company, which is Nine Entertainment here, has signed a deal with Google. Apparently it's worth about $30 million a year, and that is to feature its news in Google products. This happened yesterday, which was the eve of this historical news media law being debated in Parliament today. So it's 6 a.m. here, so I don't have any news on that. So it's all still very much developing. But the deal was the largest Australian media company so far. And it's pretty intense. It'll really change the way the media landscape is set here in Australia. And it'll be interesting to see if any more of our media companies sign this deal, and we'll see how it goes from there.
That was Zoe, and after our chat, which happens at 6 in the morning in Adelaide, Facebook has blocked Australians from receiving or sharing news stories on their feed and taking down the pages of numerous Australian organisations such as the ABC, the Bureau of Meteorology, and even Health Department websites, as well as also stopping overseas users like us from sharing Australian news content. Well, we actually tried out this morning. We tried to post a link to a ABC news story. It was blocked, and I even tried a B2 advocate news story, which if listeners don't know, it's a satirical news site. It was also blocked as well. This is also related to the law that the Australian federal government proposed earlier to make tech companies pay for posting news content. In a statement, Facebook's Australia and New Zealand managing director William Easton said the proposed law fundamentally misunderstands the relationship between the platform and publishers who use it to share news content, and it left them with few choices. Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg has said he had a constructive discussion with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg this morning, and both agreed to continue the conversation to find a pathway forward.
That was Neighbourhood Watch. Ripper.
And that was Neighbourhood Watch. Ko te waia tēnei marunga BFM. You are tuned into the Thursday Wire with me, Justin Wong, here on 95BFM. It's a 12:15. We will go for another break.
Just loving with you. I just loving with you. Don't wanna show my head, nah, nah. I ain't in it to lose. Cause if I lose, yeah, I lose you. I, yeah, I'm just bluffing with you. I, just bluffing with you. Don't wanna show my hand, no, no. I ain't in it to lose. Cause if I lose, yeah, I lose you. Follow me, my every step, and I want not to get too close, cause if they trying to own me, I'll be running to kill, straight to my next meal, that every girl I got, I said, it ain't that I don't feel for you, but I don't trust you, nah, with that power, if you need, so I keep them guys, I smoke up and fuck you good, make you howl to the moon, I got too deep in the woods, I feel best, got you in the mood, that's it, and that's how I do, if you got a problem with that, I suggest you get the fuck out of my gap, and go home, boy, just bluffing with you. I just bluffing with you. Don't wanna show my hand, no, no. I ain't in it to lose. Cause if I lose, yeah, I lose you. Where I hide my
picking up an order for Jess?
Yep, that's a quinoa salad and caramel brownie.
Perfect. I also ordered some incredible savings. Is that coming?
The savings are baked in already. Wink.
Did you just say wink?
Change the way you save with Foodprint. Download the app today, and just by ordering fresh, delicious food, you'll be helping to reduce food waste. High quality, low price, great for your wallet, great for the planet, just great food. Get your lunch on Foodprint today.
Prepare for the experience of a lifetime. Romance.
Oh, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, hello to everyone in Texas, by the way, as well.
Hey, say hello, everybody.
Oh, shit, it is all of Texas.
Intrigue.
You got that grill. Here we go.
This is a sandwich press. It's not like the George Foreman.
It's being used like a George.
Drama.
You do get approached by a lot of people going, this is the most amazing thing I've ever done in my life.
Action.
Here we go.
Oh, the phone worked.
It's the cornhole guy.
What's up, cornhole,
cornhole guy? How are you?
95 BFM Drive with Johnny and Big Hungry. Changing
your whole perspective on crap every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Only on 95 BFM.
It's music. 95 BFM.
Radio station here.
Put your hands together one time.
And we bring the truth.
I've been around the way. I got some time to do.
BFM.
95 BFM. Where all noise is created equal and you hear it first.
BFM.
The original originator. Go to 95BFM.com for show podcasts.
I'm disappointed by the government these days. Sometimes they just need a good kick in the backside.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. And before rounding up the show, we have a text. I get my daily dose of current affairs, etc. from The Wire. Balanced reporting, a good show. I don't bother with talkback radio or opinions expressed through social media. Thank you for a lovely text. But regarding on the issue, Facebook has blocked Australian news sites. That's just... That doesn't sound right, isn't it?
It's just that it's gone beyond news sites, and that the Queensland Health Facebook page, which I have been following since I lived there for a little bit, my family's over there, so I've been getting all the COVID updates through the Queensland Health Facebook page and keeping an eye on my family over in Queensland. It's gone. It's absolutely just, they've blocked it. Yeah.
It's not just Queensland Health, I think. No. The South Australian Health Department Facebook page is also gone as well.
In the middle of a pandemic.
Yes, and comes to think of it, how do Facebook measure its algorithm? A couple of months ago, I think back in January, Facebook already said they are trialing to stop showing their news content on feeds. Just a trialing, but now if you are taking out health departments in the middle of the pandemic while the entire country is about to roll its vaccination drive, and as well as taking down the meteorology department as well, I don't know what this is if you prevent people from checking the weather information.
They'll just say, look out your window.
Well, that's pretty much
just joking.
Anyway, thank you for a text. Do text in. The number is 5395 and the phone number is 39379. But it's time to round off the show.
That was The Wire.
That's all for The Wire today, the 18th of February. Thank you to my producer, Iona Piper-Helian, and those who talk to us. Thanks for joining us and for tuning in. Enjoy level 2 and the rest of the week. And wash your hands. Sigrid is here for the 124. See you next time. Mate wa.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.